Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight, we have a trip back to 1999 with the Roger Crumble movie, Cruel Intentions, based on the book Les Liaisons Dangereuses, which was adapted into the John Malkovich movie Dangerous Liaisons, and the Feroza Balkh movie Valmont, and the French People movie Les Liaisons Dangereuses from 1960.
I think of Dangerous Liaisons as the Glenn Close movie.
Yeah, or the Michelle Pfeiffer movie.
Yeah.
So, this is actually on my list. I remember having great fond feelings about this movie for what it's going to become obvious reasons here momentarily. But also, not just the movie itself, but the music is great. It's, to me, it's a great transporter back to 1999. So let's start with Brother Jay. Had you seen this movie before?
Nope.
And what's your initial thought?
Well, I will say the music was the best part of this movie for me. I had a tone problem with the first two-thirds of this movie. First of all, it was, to me, of course, because this movie was 99, but I was watching it in, you know, 17. I've seen it all before. So I've seen it before, which has been copied 8,000 ways, clearly TV and movies, because it itself is a copy. So the first two-thirds of the movie I had a hard time because I just hated it. And then at that point, I knew where the end of the movie was going. So I was really kind of out of the movie. I will say that I thought it was very well cast. I thought it was very well acted. I even thought the dialogue was good. The sets were amazing. It's amazing that they made this gorgeous movie for $10 million. It really is a testament to the hard work and the crew. But I just had a hard time with the movie.
Brother Drew, this was not the first time you've seen this movie?
No. This is a movie that I pretended for a long time that I didn't like. I was not comfortable enough with myself to admit that I really enjoyed this movie when it came out. So it was a guilty pleasure, and I'd never really pondered what it was I liked about this movie. But rewatching it again, I understand. I love Dangerous Liaisons. I like the story. I like this melodrama. In Cruel Intentions, the music is fantastic. It is so nostalgia-inducing. I mean, it's more than just like nostalgic. Like it really transports me back to a very specific time and place. But yeah, this movie is really delightful. It's super creative in the way they took a movie set in like high French court and transformed it into upper class, ultra rich high school prep school.
Effete, snotty, spoiled brats.
Yeah, and when what I understand now, like why this movie is so much fun, even though it's way over the top, it is melodrama to the extreme. It's well acted, but also it's a fantasy movie. You know, it's not it's not like swords and sandals fantasy, but it's like ultra rich fantasy. It, when you watch it, it doesn't quite match reality. I mean, there's no real parents around except when needed for it to move the plot along. It's 1999, but a lot of the aesthetics are way older and they don't talk like high schoolers. Like Jason said, the dialogue is actually really good. And it caught all of these really young actors at the perfect time to play these roles. This is probably the best thing I've ever seen Ryan Phillippe do. And he just has the perfect smarmy face and smile to be the Valmont character. He was so perfect. And Sarah Michelle Gellar, she was just a couple seasons into Buffy at the time, and she'd done the I Know What You Did Last Summer movies. So she wasn't really somebody who was on my radar. I didn't watch Buffy when it was on TV. So I wasn't really familiar with her work, but she did a great job as like a really villainous role. Yeah, I was really happy to revisit this movie. There were a couple things that didn't hold up that I hadn't remembered, like the subplot involving the closeted athlete. That doesn't translate too well into the teens. But other than that, I really enjoyed this movie. I was happy to watch it again.
Yeah, it's interesting because so when Jason said that they were effete assholes, that's like French court also, or English court or wherever the, you know. So like that whole thing, you know. Again, this is not Trainspotting. These are the effete assholes they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember liking it because, again, yeah, I like the story. And after watching this, I watched all the rest of those movies I mentioned before. And so the story is fun. So it's a nice setting for, you know, you can play. You can adapt it to a different setting and make mm-hmm. it a thing. I think that Ryan Phillippe was trying to do a little Malkovich, especially in the beginning. And that maybe was a little bit obvious to me watching it this time. Because, yeah, the language wasn't how teenagers talk. Even I would imagine really rich teenagers still wouldn't talk quite like that. So it is like a fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
But there was enough, like, Sarah Michelle Gellar is so great in this because, sure, she's like the sinister, like, sexy, evil woman. But she's also funny. She's comic relief in it. There's a lot of really funny eye rolls in a, like, an endearing way, at least to me.
She's also broken in a really vulnerable way, especially towards the end of the movie. When she finds out that Sebastian doesn't have reciprocal feelings for her.
And I really like Selma Blair is a really good actress. She's done a lot of indie films. This is the first thing I think I'd ever seen her in. And she is a straight up goofball at first, but it's fun to see that she's got a much broader range, even in this one role, because she comes off as like she's in a different movie.
Mm-hmm. All the way until her very last scene.
Yeah, exactly. But so should we just dive in?
I have a quote from boyfriend Jesse.
Had he ever seen this?
Nope.
And what did he think?
Had he ever seen Dangerous Liaisons?
Nope.
Okay.
This is what he said. This is a quote. Do you know what the worst part of this movie was? When he curbed that jag. Beginning of the movie, he does a Yui and just grinds the wheels on the curb. At that point, he checked out of the movie. So
you can't check out right there. It's still playing every you and every me.
Yeah.
That's still in my rotation. I love that song.
Placebo opening. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, and Susie Kurtz and Christine Baranski. I mean, that's.
Exactly. It's beautiful. That was great casting.
It was.
So, it starts off in New York, 1999, and we meet a womanizing teenager, Sebastian Valmont, played by Ryan Phillippe. We know from Gosford Park, Crimson Tide, I Know What You Did Last Summer. And he's with his therapist, Dr. Greenbaum, played by Susie Kurtz, from Love, Sydney, Sisters, Liar Liar, and Dangerous Liaisons.
You missed Breach, by the way.
Oh, yeah, Ryan Phillippe was in Breach, yes. Phillippe? I'm going to say his name wrong.
Who cares?
Well, that's the thing. Okay, I don't like him for the same, well, different reasons. He's just, if I can quote my youngest brother, he's got a punchable face. He just offends you with his smarm just from the word jump. In a way, I suppose, slightly different than Joshua Jackson, who's actually much more charming in this movie because he's got he's dyed blonde hair and he's the gay drug dealer.
See, I didn't have that. I don't have that reaction to Joshua Jackson.
Oh, me either. But I'm saying if Joshua Jackson was slightly less charming, I think.
He's the gayest of all drug dealers.
Yeah, well. So, Dr. Greenbaum is she's selling her own book about how great a doctor she is, blah, 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 and parenting. And she's forgiving all of Sebastian's faults because he's paying top dollar for her services.
Someone's paying top dollar for her services.
Yes. And so he's dealing with his problems with his sexual conquests and flirting with her, and she's immune to it. But again, he writes the checks.
She is not immune to it.
Well, she's mostly immune to it. But during the end of the session, she gets a phone call from her distraught daughter, Tara Reid. I'd forgotten she was in this. We know her from The Big Lebowski, American Pie, Sharknado, Urban Legend, and Scrubs.
Didn't even recognize her.
Oh, yeah. It was young Tara Reid. And he had, turns out her boyfriend had posted nude pictures of her on the internet, which now is a crime, but then wasn't. And of course, the boyfriend is Sebastian. And here we go. He's a master manipulator, a sexual manipulator, and a rich asshole.
We call that the Matt Lauerism.
So he curbs his Jaguar, and then he actually, in the same scene that Jesse was offended by, I was offended because the parking authority guy is going to give him a ticket telling he can't park there, and he like flips his hand at the guy like to dismiss him. Which I don't write traffic tickets, but if I did, I would write 100 on that. I would start kicking out license plate lights and writing a ticket for that. I would have that car fucking booted in a second.
Yeah. Does Anchorage have boots?
No, we don't. I certainly don't work in that capacity. And of course, I would not.
You would never do anything at such unlawful accord.
No, because it's business. It's not personal. Respect my authority.
No, thanks, by the way, for the drop-in of the Uncle Fucker song. because as I was leaving my doctor's office today in the third level of the underground parking garage, and the podcast came on my car automatically when I restarted it, and I had the windows down as I was coming up, that's what was coming out, blaring out of my speakers as I was, like, passing other people in the parking lot.
Can we do that movie next week? I think we need a slump buster for Jason.
We could.
We could.
We could do that. Slump busting.
Asses of fire.
Slump busting makes me feel good. Actually, it's funny because it was also after I had put Uncle Fucker, I had also decided, well, fuck it. I'm just going to put the Jonas Brothers Must Die.
It was pretty funny. Because I was amused.
The end, the button at the end, which is really dark, is also the thing that makes it the most funny.
The payoff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So no, I couldn't edit that part out because that's the button. Yeah. Anyway. So it turns out I'm an Andrew O'Neill fan. Thank you, Dougie. So anyway, we meet Sarah Michelle Gellar, plays Catherine, his stepsister. Yes. And We know her from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I Know What You Did Last Summer, and Scooby-Doo. And she is great.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a big Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, but she's great. She's just a good actress. And she is taking in the sheltered and naive Cecile, played by Selma Blair, who we know from In-N-Out, Legally Blonde, Hellboy, A Dirty Shame, and Anger Management, the TV show. And Cecile's mom is Christine Baranski, who we know from Sybil and a shit ton of other stuff. She's great, too.
The Good Wife and The Good Fight.
Yeah. So that's the spinoff?
Yeah. I haven't seen it because I refuse to pay for CBS TV, but...
Yeah. Well...
I heard it was good-ish.
Drew calls that the Grandma Network.
I do call it the Grandma Network.
CBS in general?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of my favorite shows this season is getting canceled because of this... Well, that's not true. It's getting canceled because it's also one of the most lowest rated shows so far in the ratings.
Because it's on the wrong network.
Yeah, well, also because Jeremy Piven's involved. They decided just to drop that, not give it another season just to try to pick up the pace.
They're getting out ahead of the curve.
Yeah, well, there's already been.
Because his days are numbered.
No, there's already had allegations of fondling.
Yeah, there's been allegations. He's for the better part of probably two decades.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's totally in the spacey zone.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Well, no, I think he's more of the Lauer zone.
He's another guy with the punchable face.
Mm-hmm.
He was great in Entourage, but he was playing probably very...
He's great in Wisdom of Crowds, too. He's a good actor.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the intrigue here is that Cecile, her boyfriend is... her current boyfriend is Catherine's ex-boyfriend. Catherine got dumped for this chick. And so Catherine is going to do scorched earth on the old boyfriend by turning his new girlfriend into a shameless whore.
She's really playing the long game.
Yes.
I also don't understand. I know that was the hard part I had. I didn't understand how that wouldn't benefit the boyfriend.
No, his reputation. Reputations are most important in this world. It's all about reputation. Catherine's got to have a great reputation. Sebastian has a bad reputation as a womanizer. A reputation that he has to uphold. Catherine does all this shenanigans behind the scenes, but it has to be behind the scenes because she's got the reputation as the class president, blah, blah, blah. So it's all about reputations. And then we meet Annette Hargrove. Reese Witherspoon, who we know from Walk the Line, Legally Blonde, Twilight, Freeway, Pleasantville, Election, and Mud.
Election.
She is transferring into their prep school or whatever they go to. Having had written this article in Vogue or something about being a virgin. So.
Yes.
She would have worn a Jonas Brothers promise ring.
Exactly, yeah. So, Catherine has asked Sebastian to help with Cecile, but in the meantime, Sebastian actually has got bigger game on his mind, and that's Annette, Reese Witherspoon. And Annette is, by the way, her father is the new headmaster of the prep school. And this all takes place summer before it was presumably their senior year, because these people are all in their late 20s in real life.
mid-20s maybe.
Yeah, it's not quite Greece, but it's, you know, it's good though, because there's, you know, you wouldn't want real teenagers, especially these days, in this kind of movie. Or those days, because it was 20 years
old. I think Selma Blair might have been 30.
No. It's funny though. But everybody looks good. That's the other thing about this movie. The beauty of this movie is the cast is beautiful, the sets are beautiful, the songs are beautiful. It's all a very pretty picture. So they're basically have a wager now, because Catherine doesn't think Sebastian can seduce Annette. So the wager is, if Catherine wins and and Sebastian can't seduce her, he gets his vintage Jaguar.
She gets
his Jaguar, and if he wins, he gets to stick it in her butt. Have sex with his sister.
Stepsister.
She didn't quite use those words.
Stepsister, and yeah. That's what she was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it's kind of funny because, it's just, that's the kind of thing that made that whole scene. Because it was, just uncomfortable enough to be awesome. So then we meet Cecile's music teacher, Ronald Clifford, played by Sean Patrick Thomas, who we know from Barbershop and Halloween Resurrection.
We do not.
Okay.
I was going to say, maybe you do, but...
He's a handsome black man, which is wrong for Cecile in so many ways in her society. Although he gets some funny scene-chewing because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I'd be careful how you say that.
No, that sounds about right.
So, who plays Sebastian's aunt? I don't have it in my notes. Oh, Louise Fletcher. From One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest and 2 Days in the Valley.
Oh, I was going to say Murder, She Wrote?
That would be Jessica Fletcher.
But, I know.
No, Louise Fletcher's great. She's, it's funny because Christine Baranski, Louise Fletcher, Susie Kurtz, all of them are very natural in their performances.
And also very strong.
Yeah. And in some sense, Selma Blair is pretty natural. But the three main leads have kind of got that Dangerous Liaison shtick going on. Which again works, but it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have all these webs out there.
They're both running game. Catherine is trying to ruin Selma Blair, and Sebastian is trying to seduce Reese Witherspoon, and hijinks ensue.
Yeah. And there's the subplot where we have Joshua Jackson, who plays the gay drug dealer Blaine. It's a little on the nose for a gay drug dealer name, but oh well. We know him from Dawson's Creek, Fringe, App Pupil, and the Mighty Ducks movies.
His only better cliche name would have been if they called him Bruce.
Yeah. Well, actually, wasn't Blaine part of the Men on Film?
I don't know. It was Twan and... I don't know.
Antoine Merriweather, I think. And...
Wow, you're really going back there.
Oh, I can't... Yeah, what?
I didn't know what you were referring to until you said Antoine Merriweather.
Yeah, anyway. Sorry. Men on Film. Exactly. Two snaps.
Nicely done.
And now Public Access presents Men on Films.
Hello, I'm Blaine Edwards, and I'm Antoine Merriweather, and welcome to Men on Films.
That show was so inappropriate, but so funny. So Annette's ex-boyfriend, I guess? Current boyfriend?
Current boyfriend.
Is the football player?
No. Just, ex-boyfriend. Just,
oh, just a close friend.
Just a close friend. They knew each other back in Kansas.
Yes, okay. Oh, because, yeah. So
I thought they were engaged.
No, that's true.
No, she was engaged to... We never saw her fiancé, right?
Huh.
Oh, see, I just assumed he was the fiancé.
Nope.
Yeah, the notes here, the plot synopsis says that he's the ex-boyfriend, but no, he's just a long-term friend. They've known each other since kindergarten. Which, by the way, it would be fine for her to have a gay best friend, but no, he's a jock, so he can't be gay. So he's just super gay, but in the closet. So it's good for blackmail material.
Just so long as he's not a black male, because that wouldn't go in sports.
Well, remember, that's a whole... No, wait. Okay, I'm going to take a knee.
I was going to say, it's okay for him to kneel if he's a gay dude, because he's taking the dick, but not if he's a black dude.
Oh, God.
There's a long way to go for that joke, but I'm a big faggler, so, I'm glad you could laugh.
Yeah, anyway. Sebastian tries to hit on Annette, but she doesn't go for it because she's been warned by an anonymous person. Well, through hijinks, we find out that that anonymous person is Christine Baranski, who is Cecile's mom.
Now, do we actually really know that, though?
Yeah.
We never find that. It's never confirmed.
Well, it was never confirmed.
It's just purported.
Explicitly, yeah, but.
Could have been Catherine all along.
I actually, even though I'd seen this movie before, I still expected it to be Catherine.
Yeah, I suspect it was Catherine.
No, it's not. Well, Catherine may have told. See, nothing ever. See, Catherine doesn't do anything directly. That's the magic of Catherine. So Catherine probably contacted Mrs. Caldwell, who then contacted Annette.
No, I could very easily see Catherine having created this. She was working with the love letters. She does things directly.
No. Well, no, because everything Catherine does to Cecile isn't about Cecile. It's all about the ex-boyfriend. Oh, yes, that's who Trent is. Sorry. Yeah, Catherine never does anything directly, and Sebastian always does things directly. Well, sort of.
Catherine is the Vic Mackey of this movie.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, she's done worse. So...
By the way, congratulations on bringing home the Vic Mackey trophy this year.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, I've had the Vic Mackey trophy every year. Someday there will be a Vic Mackey trophy. Long after Vic Mackey has any cultural relevance. Although, with the way the season's going, you could jump right in and still have a chance. So, Sebastian gets shot down by Annette, and when he finds out that it's Cecile's mom, then he decides to help Catherine with her plan to ruin Cecile. And so they end up participating and getting the handsome black man music teacher and the naive white girl kind of hooked up and then spring mom on them.
Yeah, there are some really funny scenes between Sebastian and Cecile when he is teaching her sex things.
Yes.
Because he is so mean.
Oh, yeah. Like,
shoves her off the bed at one point.
He is, he's funny, such though. Such a bastard.
Yeah, but Selma Blair plays it in such a funny way that she's not actually a victim. I mean, she's enjoying herself through the whole process. So you don't feel bad for her necessarily. I didn't. And yeah, he's just a jerk. But no, you get a very provocative girls kissing scene. I think that won an award that year. And you have all of this super sexual movie, but not a lot. I mean, you don't see really a lot of flesh in this movie.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all suggestive. It's not graphic.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's when the movie takes a little bit of a turn. And Sebastian continues to try to seduce Annette and ends up going to the assisted living home or whatever, the retirement home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. I actually like Sebastian's whole play on the thing. And we get to see Reese Witherspoon's like little devil face, which is so cute.
Did she do that in Freeway?
She might have. I don't know. Freeway was a different kind of movie, though.
It was.
Although, arguably, one of the best Kiefer Sutherland performances ever toward the end.
And we got to see the very spicy Elena Reed Hall.
Who's Elena Reed Hall?
She played the nurse in the nursing home, the black nurse.
Oh.
She was on 227.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
She was also Olivia on Sesame Street.
Yep.
I actually sent an officer to a call on Sesame Street a month and a half ago. And he immediately said,
can you tell me how
how to get there? And I was like, I was typing on my computer to give him directions. Then I realized, I'm like, oh, I can't fall for it. And then he sent a message saying, what, nothing? I've waited my whole career to say this. I'm like, yeah. So the next time anybody asks me how they can get Sesame Street, I'll tell them they need to Zoom by the electric company.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Did not yes and him?
No, I couldn't. I was embarrassed about almost getting caught.
Wow, you just left him. You froze him out.
No, 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 no. This is on the radio. I can't. Yeah, I can't yes, and on the radio.
I was gonna say that's the problem is that one time that you play it off as a joke, it's gonna end up to haunt you forever. It'll be on the news that night.
Yeah, I there has to be a level of professionalism on the radio. Anything I say that's funny on the radio, like when I refer to a certain drug as marijuanica, is completely by accident.
You called it marijuanica?
Oh yeah, yeah. I also referred to a Suzuki car as a Grand Viagra.
Nice.
They were so. Oh no, I did not do it on purpose. It's because Sandy used to have a Grand Vitara, and I always called it a Grand Viagra. And that's it. Just we were busy, and my recruit was behind, so I'm like, okay, you type, I'll talk. And I was like, blah, blah, you go here, you go here, you go here, you go here to the Grand Viagra. And he goes, I believe it's a Grand Vitara. And then all these radios are clicking. And then on another channel, I was just saying, oh, I don't want to go to that call. And the back, one of my now supervisors is yelling out, does that have its own lift kit?
Very nice.
Yeah.
Everybody was clicking their radio so you couldn't hear them laughing?
No, they were clicking it instead of saying something silly.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's a little acknowledgement that doesn't, although now you wouldn't be able to do it with the digital radios and fuck everything up, I'm sure. But... Yeah, so this is where we break open Sebastian's heart and find out that he's got some sort of heart in there, and he falls in love with Annette.
And they do have chemistry. I mean, sometimes you get real couples on screen and they do not have chemistry, like Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, because they were a real couple at the time, right?
Yep, I think they had just started dating. Before they started filming this movie. But yeah, they were really good together. I mean, and it was believable that they fell in love with each other. And it was really uncomfortable when they were fighting.
Yeah. And we have, you know, boy gets girl, boy loses girl, boy tries to get girl back, this whole thing.
Boy sabotages relationship with girl because he realizes he's not good enough for her.
Yeah. And then boy goes to try to collect anything he, you know, at least a small amount of victory from his defeat. And at this point, his sister's like, no, I don't sleep with losers.
Yeah. And in her own way, Catherine revealed that how devastated she was when she realized that Sebastian had actually fallen in love with Annette. Because that was not part of the plan. He was always supposed to pine for her.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were two evil peas in a pod.
Mm-hmm.
And when she finds out that he's not as evil as she is, or whatever.
Two tears in a bucket.
Yeah, but when she tries to break him, she is merciless.
Oh yeah, it's great.
Yeah, she was chilling.
I would have preferred the deleted scene.
Oh yeah,
well, I didn't watch it.
Yeah, so no, I didn't watch it either. It's like, yeah.
What? I watched both of those features. You didn't watch either of them.
So are we talking about the deleted scene where actually he does hit Catherine?
Yes.
And then Catherine calls Ronald and says that.
Yeah, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. By the way, Ronald's not a good guy either, because Ronald's also sleeping with Catherine.
Yep. So after she told him that. He was just her toy. He hit her in the deleted scene.
Mm-hmm. It would change the flavor of it slightly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hit her, and then they have a fight, and he actually ends up on top of her, pinning her down.
So super uncomfortable.
I like it better that she made it up.
Yeah.
And was just manipulating Ronald. It seems more in character.
Well, and that's what the I don't know if he was the writer, director, whoever he was, he said that he knew that if he had put the scene in as intended, he would have lost the audience. They would have just they wouldn't have been able to follow it. They would have just been done with it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like so we can as we skip toward the end of this movie, because for all the shenanigans, this is, you know, it's a lot of weaving stuff, but much like a movie that I actually ordered when I did my Christmas shopping and we should put on the calendar, the most famous version of Murder on the Orient Express, you know, you kind of know what you're getting in this kind of movie. You know, there's some twists and turns, but ultimately it's a pretty simple story with a pretty limited cast of characters. But even watching the movie this time, I wasn't even convinced that Sebastian died at the end. Because it's kind of...
I thought that too. I was expecting that little twist at the end.
Yeah.
Where she would walk out of the church and there was Sebastian, like...
Because why is she smiling holding onto his book in his car? Why did she get his car?
Well, no, that's what happens.
Yeah, I guess.
That's what happens with the ultra rich.
Yeah.
It's the laws of inheritance in that fantasy world.
So, yeah. Yeah, he dies at the end. Hit by a car, saving his love, blah, blah, blah.
And Jesse was at this point screaming at the TV like, that's bullshit. He wouldn't have died from that. He didn't barely get hit hard enough. What the F?
Yes, you know, a traumatic brain injury is a sneaky thing. Ask Natasha Richardson.
Or Sonny Bono.
Sonny Bono, yes. Or,
Come on, go for the third one. Come on.
OxyClean. You can do it. The OxyClean guy.
Billy Mays.
Yes, there you go. Damn it.
I thought he had a heart attack.
He did.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was the cocaine.
The initial thing was that he hit his head in an overhead bin in a plane, I think.
It's just a cold.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Yeah. Soon there's a sock singing at your funeral. We do have a Dennis Leary movie coming up, don't we? So, wow. Yeah. So, at the end, we have Catherine gets hoisted by Sebastian's petard. And Cecile, I guess, gets happy that Catherine is brought down, and it's satisfying to see Catherine being brought down because, you know, she's a liar. And you realize that they hadn't met each other, Annette and Catherine, officially, right until
right
to Sebastian's already dead. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and this is how you know that it's a good movie, that at the end of the movie, that scene where Catherine is getting her comeuppance. The scene in Dangerous Liaisons to compare that to is this iconic scene where Glenn Close is taking off her makeup, which is just the culmination of that movie, Dangerous Liaisons. Everything is just in the way she's taking off her makeup as her world is crumbling around her. And in Cruel Intentions, it's done differently, but it's still ultra effective.
Yeah.
And I think that demonstrates what a good job and how creative this movie was updating it and moving settings.
Well, he called it a modern period piece.
And this, the reason it's successful at all is the music. Because the whole thing opens when you meet Sebastian, it opens with a fucking kick-ass song, "Every You Ever Meet" by Placebo. Sucker love is known to swing, prone to cling and waste these things. Pucker up for heaven's sake, there's never been so much. Which is perfect, and it's because it's super upbeat and it's kind of angsty and it's, you know, it's kind of grungy as in the time. Well, not grungy, but, you know, alt kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get like the sort of twee, but also very popular Love Fool by the Cardigans.
Yeah, Yes.
And I love the Cardigans, but this song, Love Fool, is a stupid twee song. Also very popular. Then we got Marcy Playgrounds coming up from behind, which I think is great. Grindy, kind of raunchy, like beat to it. It's great, bass heavy.
Most of their stuff is like,
yeah. Then we have Fatboy Slim's "Praise You," which is great. Listener Heather had "Praise You" playing at her wedding. Then we have, and the big love scene is "Colorblind" by Counting Crows.
I am colorblind. Coffee black and egg white. I am ready, I am ready, I am ready, I am taffy stuck, tongue tied.
It's so 90s.
It's super so 90s. Yeah. Well, the only thing more 90s than that was "Bittersweet Symphony" by The Verve.
That's right.
Cause it's a bittersweet symphony.
I could go my whole life and never hear that song again.
Yeah, but you know what? It's perfect for this movie, though. Because it's got, you know, like the strings and stuff, the orchestral sounds to it. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's just like that Cardigan song. Even if you don't like it, you know it. It's evocative. It's super catchy. It's effective.
Well, and it's that's why like colorblind works so good for the love scene, even though it's not, I don't know. I mean, it's not what I would consider like love scene music, but it's perfect in that 90s sense.
Oh, it's totally meant to manipulate you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In a good way.
And it worked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So any other notes on Cruel Intentions?
I just posed a question for Sebastian. Is this how we get antibiotic-resistant gonorrhea?
Yes.
That's it.
Did you know they were going to make a TV show?
Did they not make one?
They did not. They made the pilot.
About drug-resistant gonorrhea?
No. It was like a prequel. It was like a young Catherine.
Oh, that's what, like 12?
Played by Amy Adams. And I guess there was a scene where she was teaching teaching another girl how to masturbate while riding a horse.
Huh.
And the network was like, no, 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 not doing it.
Yeah.
So they actually did some reshoots and added some more scenes.
Well, Sebastian showing a male friend how to masturbate a horse.
Yeah.
That took a turn quickly.
Did we have the brucellosis talk? I think we did.
Yeah. And anyway, they eventually added some more footage and released it straight to video as Cruel Intentions 2.
Wow. That's awesome. So Amy Adams plays a young Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Yes.
aren't they the same age?
Amy Adams might be older.
Yeah, that's funny. She's the Angela Lansbury, going back to Miss Fletcher, of her day.
By the way, Selma Blair was 27 when they shot Cruel Intentions.
And how old was Reese Witherspoon?
She was 22, 23.
Oh, okay. This is... So, of course, everything through the lens of 2017, motherfucker Harvey Weinstein. So, Roger Crumble, his goal was to get Reese Witherspoon to go out to dinner, and they were going to all get her drunk and then convince her to do the movie. And they did!
Good job, guys.
Yeah, it's like, oh, no. This just does not come off very good. They did not say whether Roger Crumble had the locks on the inside of the doors like Matt Lauer did, but oh well. So Drew, actually here we go, Brother Jay, your verdict.
So I didn't hate this movie. So as I said, you know, to recap, great actors, great acting, great dialogue. It just the material itself was difficult. So I'll give it a B. I think that's being generous.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Brother Drew, was it worth it?
It makes me wonder if your baseline has changed over the past few weeks.
I think so, yeah. I need a little relief.
But I love it. This movie is worth it. Absolutely. Especially if you're old enough to remember the 90s, then this is a must. If you haven't seen it, I don't know what you're doing. If you've seen Dangerous Liaisons and you love that movie, then this movie is a must. But yeah, no, it's a great time. I really enjoyed rewatching it. Makes me want to go back and not watch the deleted scenes because that sounds horrible.
Well, that was interesting. It was interesting. Plus, you get to hear him talk about the sets and the set designs and how they did the costumes and the clothing and the kind of the stylistic choices that they made and that, you know, they made Annette was in pastels, light pastels up until the end when she was in red, when she was meeting Sebastian at the escalators, and that Catherine's room was very deliberately dark and cold and very princess queen, cold queen like. When Sebastian's room was very kind of warm brown tones and kind of hunting lodge-esque style because he was kind of a hunter. So there's a lot of interesting stuff on those two deleted things. So,
is that semiotics? Is that what is? Isn't that what they call like, like making those kinds of choices?
No. Could be right. I also have a version of the movie I can give you with audio commentary.
Bye.
So you can rewatch it and enjoy the movie a whole different way. I think by the director. I don't know if any of the actors showed up. I haven't listened to it.
Well, Roger Cumbel has directed. He's actually collaborated a lot with the Farrelly brothers, but he has directed on his own The Sweetest Thing, which I think is a Selma Blair movie, right? And Furry Vengeance.
Was that Christina Applegate?
Yeah, Christina Applegate, Cameron Diaz, and Selma Blair, maybe?
Did you say Furry Vengeance?
I did say Furry Vengeance.
That movie sounds great.
It's on the calendar for next week, Jason.
Two thumbs up. and a twist.
Yeah. If that is set in 1997, I'm in.
What is Furry Vengeance? I recognize the poster, but I haven't seen it.
Watch it be a Rutger Hauer movie. Double feature Blind Fury and Furry Vengeance.
It's a Chuck Norris
Charles movie. Bronson.
Chuck Norris movie where he goes to a furry convention. The one that his daughter was killed at the year before. Sorry, that's now a Liam Neeson movie. Furry Vengeance, 2010. Brendan Fraser.
Oh, dear. I can't even picture what a 2010 Brendan Fraser looks like.
Hoping to make enough money for an overseas employer to live comfortably, real estate developer Dan Sanders manages to convince his son Tyler and his wife Tammy to relocate to a remote corner of Oregon. Tyler does seem content after he meets with lovely Amber, but Tammy is concerned about her husband when he near hysterically claims that the local creatures, including beavers, ravens, bears, foxes, etc., have joined forces to sabotage his project.
Ooh, he doesn't look good.
Yeah, there's something happened to him.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh. Yikes.
Are you turning into the Macho Man?
Ooh, yeah. Hoorah. He looks. You could morph him into Bill Paxton if you needed to. Well, except for, you know, the fact that Bill Paxton's dead. But
We do need to, actually, yeah. R.I.P.
Let me just point out... In this movie, we have Brendan Fraser, Brooke Shields, Eugene Cordero, comedian, Patrice O'Neill, R.A.P., comedian, Jim Norton, comedian, Billy Bush, former Entertainment Tonight host, and presidential wingman, Ken Jeong, doctor and comedian.
Samantha Bee.
Yes.
A strong cast.
And a guy named Gary Bedknob. I don't believe that name. You can't. His name is probably like Jaime Stinkelmeiner, but he changed his name to Jerry Bedknob. Sorry, Jerry Bedknob.
That is definitely a pseudonym for Ken Jeong.
Best known for The 40-Year-Old Virgin, Zach and Mary Make a Porno, and Honey 2.
Honey was successful enough to spawn a sequel?
Apparently.
That's great.
Wasn't Honey like a Mariah Carey movie? Or I'm thinking of Glitter.
Yeah, I want to say Jessica Alba. So good job, Dark Angel.
First I thought you were praising me, but no.
No, I'd call you something else.
Say I've never been Dark Angel. Yes, my nicknames will come mostly out of the Brendan Fraser universe, not the Jerry Bedknob universe. So, I really like Cruel Intentions. Thank you for allowing me to put it on the calendar. Next week, Jason gets to pick. You can certainly pick.
Well, I thought we already picked South Park.
That's fine. We can do that. If you're amenable to it, I think you should be able to go.
Oh, no, I'm
I saw, while we're talking about it, I guess we can move on to housekeeping a little bit. I just saw this afternoon, because I was actually homesick the last 2 days. Journey was homesick the first 3 days of this week, but I got what she got, and I watched Train to Busan.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good. What do you think? It's pretty good. I mean, it's a little heavy-handed in the themes.
Yeah.
But that's as far as being a zombie movie, it's pretty great.
I really liked it. I had low expectations, but I was really surprised.
Yeah. What else did I watch? I watched a bunch of movies the last week. Sadly, they're all kind of forgettable, I guess.
I saw a really good one. I saw a movie on opening weekend for the first time in probably 10 years.
Justice League?
No. I saw Coco.
Oh, we were thinking about seeing Coco, but Journey doesn't want to see it.
That's a mistake. Coco is great, but show up late.
Because it's got a 20-minute Olaf thing?
Yeah. After like 15 minutes of previews. That is not okay to take young kids to. That's the whole reason you take them to a short movie, because they can't sit through something long. You can't add 45 minutes to the beginning before they even start the movie.
I think we might go see The Star, because Journey was really interested in Mangers and The First Christmas.
Oh.
Hopefully Whoopi Goldberg or whoever can give her the religious training that I'm not going to.
Believe that's going to be Tracy Morgan. Oh. Good luck. No, if you can talk her into Coco, you should definitely go. It's
yeah. Kelly wants to see Coco. It's really, I'll tell her that Uncle Drew saw it. So Journey also said something this weekend that she asked if we were going to make a gingerbread house this year. And I'm like, well, I've never really had any luck doing gingerbread houses. And she goes, we always do gingerbread houses. I'm like, I don't always do. She goes, no. In fact, I always do it with Uncle Jason. I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
So, yeah, we've done it once.
Yeah, well, now it's her
tradition. We've done it exactly every once.
No, but now it's a part of her ingrained memory.
Well, you can tell her that not this year, but next year.
Okay.
So 2018.
That's how traditions are formed.
Yeah. What other movies did I see? I swear. I saw Charade, which I think I'd seen before. It's the Cary Grant and Walter Matthau and Audrey Hepburn movie. And I was going to follow it up with a Mark Wahlberg, Tandy Newton movie, The Truth About Charlie, which is a remake of Charade, but I couldn't bring myself to do it.
Tandy Newton's great.
Oh, she is. Mark Wahlberg, you know, he could have prevented 9/11 if he was on the right plane. That's not fair.
I thought that was James Woods.
No, it was Mark Wahlberg too. Yeah.
That reminds me, we got to put The Big Hit on the calendar somewhere.
Is that the Christina Applegate one? Mark Wahlberg, Christina Applegate? No.
That's Mark Wahlberg and Lou Diamond Phillips.
Are you sure Christina Applegate's not in it?
She may be. Was she the girlfriend? Maybe the wife. He had a wife and a mistress.
Ah.
Another 90s classic. Yeah, you're right. It was Christina Applegate.
Okay. She was a Pop-Tart back then, so she was pretty good in that sitcom she did too. It's like
the one with Will Arnett or the one before with Samantha Who?
No, not Samantha Who. The one before Samantha Who. The one with the guy from the pollen commercial, who plays the bee in the pollen commercial with the sexy accent.
The Nason XP.
Yes. Jesse.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You're going way back.
Yeah. It had Liza Snyder from Yes, Dear. And yes, Bruno Campos.
That's not the guy from Lost guy.
Bruno Campos?
Mm-hmm. Nestor Carbonell. Bruno Campos is not Nestor Carbonell.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.